What is going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 37 of the MM Arcade Podcast. Rob, you've been having a very busy week. You've been everywhere. How's it going?
Yeah, very good, man. Really good. It has been busy, obviously, with the camp being like the fight being announced, camp starting, and then with the success Jacob had, and then the coaches coming back, and now we're reorganizing, rescheduling everything. And it's just, I don't know, it's like camps are crazy. And I've just jumped straight back into one. But I do want to say, though, thank you to everybody for the support, subscriptions, and followings we have on the page, mate. We have almost hit 20K. We have
So maybe after this episode, if you were to subscribe, if you are new, we can hit 20,000 subscribers. That's going to be a pretty big milestone for us. It inches us closer, bro, to 100,000K. So we can get you that plaque. That's the goal, right?
That's the goal. By the way, just a public service announcement. My kids are home and it's crazy. Don't stress. you can hear them in the background. They're going to be around.
I kind of get a sense of it now because I moved, for those of you that don't know. So we're living with my wife's mum, and just being in another house with other people and having to like lower your voice if you're recording at night and just hearing people in the background, I'm used to it now as well. It's part and parcel.
It is different. Like there are just moving pieces that you just can't control, right?
Yeah.
And who doesn't know you haven't moved yet? Like, look at your background, man. It is still
Stop making fun of my background. I can't change it. Look.
Throw a lick of paint on it, man.
I would literally have to remove those doors and do something there, but it's not my house, so I don't have permission. But, dude, we've got an I don't want to say it's a big week of news, both in MMA and games, but it's an interesting week, all right? So we've got to talk about UFC Atlantic City. We've got to talk about some UFC news. First up, let's talk about the eye poking that took place at Atlantic City. That's by far the biggest talking point, and it wasn't just the one fight. There were two fights with some eye poking controversy, but the biggest one was obviously Chris Weidman against Bruno Silva. Multiple eye pokes in that fight, which, from my perspective, somewhat contributed to the ending of the fight. But we also saw Dumas as well get eye poked in his fight. Bro, what do you think about it all? What do you think about the eye poking and the rulings and everything?
So I'm a big fan of Chris Weidman, okay?
Okay.
And I understand, like, eye pokes happen, they do. But I do think they're significant enough that it needs to be looked at. Like, you get a warning, and then, like, one warning, and then you shouldn't get any more warnings, right? Because you'll notice the guys that get busted for eye poking get busted for eye poking a lot. And the guys that don't eye poke never eye poke. It's like that. But with Weidman, I'll say, firstly, no joke, and this led into the finish. Weidman gave him a 1-2 with two eye pokes.
Like, I know.
And I'm laughing. And I'm not taking the mickey out of you. I'm not. Okay. Like I said, I really like the guy. And honestly, I am happy he got a win. I think it's a bit funny how he got the win, but that's not my job to worry about that side of things. But he hit him with the one and then hit him with the two in both eyes. That was that is next level. I loved it. Oh, I loved it. Like, it looked funny as, okay? But then, obviously, the ruling happened, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And they started talking back and forth on social media. And Weidman fully went all in on the eye poke and was just like, you can't drop every time you get an eye poke. Like, just taking all the severity out of the eye poke and just owning it. It was just like, I don't know. It was a mess.
Look, from my perspective, obviously good to see him back. Good to see him back in the win column. But something needs to be done about that. You can't, and I know that they overruled or overturned the decision. I went from a TKO to a unanimous decision victory. But with all those camera angles, so Weidman still got the victory, but it was a unanimous decision as opposed to a TKO. That was the change that happened afterwards, right? But he still got the victory, and a lot of us are sitting here saying, with all those camera angles and how many times that you could look at it, literally just after the fight, you know, was called, mind you, how do you not overturn this? Silva is looking to appeal it. What do you think is going to happen with this, if anything at all?
I don't know of any appeal personally that has ever gone through, okay, like, or ever worked. But you'd have to, like, if there was going to be an overruling or like a overturning, is that how you say it? I don't know.
Yeah.
If there is going to be one, it would have to be that one, right? Because no joke. He hit him in the left eye with the jab and hit him in the right eye with the cross. Like
the 1-2.
I cannot stress enough. He gave him a 1-2 in both eyes, like poke. Like it was crazy. And it wasn't the first poke of the fight either.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. That honestly, just insane. Like for Silva's sake, I do feel horrible. I've been eye poked, but never that badly. Like it freaking sucks. It destabilizes you. You can't do anything. So imagine trying to fight a professional fighter with that kind of pain and visibility. That sucks.
Yeah, I've been eye poked in that second fight with Adesanya. I got eye poked multiple times, and it's hard, very very hard because when. Like if you get eye poked, your vision literally doubles, you know, like it, your eyes play up and it's something you can't control that adrenaline doesn't get you through. It doesn't hurt per se, but you literally can't see properly depending on how severe the eye poke is. It's, I think at the very least it should be ruled in no contest and they rematch.
I agree.
At the very least, very least.
So I saw a couple of breakdowns of the rules and apparently it is all up to referee discretion in the moment anyways. But some people were saying if there is an eye poke, at the very least, straight away warning. If there's a second one, take a point. And if there's a third one, call it. Because then that's like, it's just too far. And how many did we have in that fight? Like 4? 2 in the 1 sequence? I feel sorry for Silva. I really do.
Yeah.
But let's see what happens with that afterwards. But Rob, so we were talking about this before we started recording the podcast. And this is what I said to Rob. So Jacob Malkoon against Andrei Petroski. It wasn't controversial. It was just the other weird thing that happened on the weekend. And I said to Rob, oh man, you know, Andre got knocked out cold on Jacob's hip. And then Rob was like, no, that's not what happened. And he showed me footage and I have to change my opinion on it. So Rob, explain it. What happened with Jacob Malkoon, your teammate, against Andre Petroski?
So my teammate got a very snazzy win, TKO finish. I think he looked phenomenal in the first round. He was the fastest he's looked. His jab was on point. Everything was going to plan. Andre shoots in for a single in the second round. And what doesn't get seen is Jacob throws the tightest left hook and Andre hits Andre's dome on the way in. Okay. And then obviously what happens is what you've seen. He falls to the floor. Jacob gets a running kick to the ribs. Mate, that's my dream to land in a fight, by the way. But and then the rest is history. But because of the weird angle, you can't really see it. It looked like Andre knocked himself out on his hip, but no. You saw the footage I showed you. And
I did.
And the footage I showed was just what was shown on the night. It's actually on the It was during the interview. You see the punch land on his head. You see the hair fly back, the head get impacted. So, yeah, I obviously at the time it was a very hard thing to see, but I'm very happy with his win. He's very happy for his win. I think he wants a quick turnaround. So, yeah, you know, it's good to have him back and it's good for him to be back in the winning column.
Yeah, and for those of you that haven't seen that footage, do search it out because it completely changed my opinion on what happened. Either way, he got the win, and it doesn't take away from his win. But I just wished in the moment they found that camera angle and showed it straight away. Similar to the biting incident of the other week, it completely changes the opinions of the commentators and therefore people watching the fight. So if they found that angle, the opinions on how that fight actually ended would have been completely different.
Definitely. He might have got booed less.
Well, it was like, I get it. When you see a weird knockout or a weird ending, people are confused. That's probably their first instinct. But that's not how it ended. I saw it. My opinion has been changed on it. So that was UFC Atlantic City. A bunch of results from that as well. But we want to talk about a couple of bits of UFC news. First of all, Rob, you know, you had your fight announced last week. You talked a bit about it last week. And you've been doing multiple things. You were appearing on Mighty Mouse's podcast. You talked a bit about your fight there. I've seen a number of people talk about, you know, you getting matched up against Hamzat. For instance, Michael Bisping came out very much in support of you. And he said the following: automatically, if you're on the corner of Hamzat Chimaev, you've got to be concerned. Believe me, Believe You Me is the podcast he was on. One thing Robert Whittaker is not going to do is run out of gas. He's a very, very experienced fighter, fighting at the highest level for a long time. Without getting into the X and O's, the obvious thing for Khamzat is always gases. So what do you think about your fight after, you know, things have settled? What do you think about what Michael said? And if you want to reflect on your podcast with Mighty Mouse, feel free.
So the podcast was great. It was great to just sit there and chat with Mighty Mouse, and just I don't know, we talked about a lot of different things, about games, about fighting. It was a fun chat, and he did say he's super happy to come on our podcast. So I think when we're ready to open up the door to those guests, is that what we're going to call them?
We'll think of a cool name. Think of some cool names on the comments below, and we'll take them.
I think when we're ready to open the door to guests, he's going to be our leading guy.
100%.
In terms of the fight itself with Khamzat, it's going to be a hard fight because Khamzat knows the level that I'm at. He understands the value of this fight and what getting a win does, because getting a win in this fight puts us in the title contention. That's what Dana's said, and that's, you can see this fight, the winner of this fight's fighting for a title. Yeah. So I think understanding that he's going to be training his heart out. He understands I have wrestling defense. He understands I have gas. He understands I have good striking. So he's going to be trying to capitalize on working his, shoring up his weaknesses whilst reinforcing his strengths, just like I'm doing. I expect a hard fight. I expect the best version of Khamzat, just like I did with Costa. And mate, like, I'm willing to grind. I got, this is the 12th week out, and I'm throwing myself at the sessions. I'm going to grind out and just come into this fight the best version of myself. That's the only thing I really can control. And I want to work my way into this fight the best version of myself, take the win, and then, you know, onwards to bigger and better things, getting that gold back.
Yeah, 100%. I wanted to ask you though, your fight camps, whether or not you take a fight, you know, 4 months out or 6 months out or a year out, whatever it might be, how long are your fight camps usually? Are they around 12 weeks or so?
Generally around 12 weeks.
Okay.
Because that gives you like a nice cushioning period to just ease into the sessions.
Yeah.
Because obviously you can't go from just day-to-day training to camp, like peak camp. It's too much on the body. So things are going to get start to get much harder. I'm not looking forward to it, but you know, Khamzat's not going to beat himself up.
No, 100%. So really excited to see that. We'll obviously keep talking about it as the weeks go on. But next up, we're going to talk about UFC Perth, the next pay-per-view that's taking place in Australia. Very cool to see. Nowhere near us, by the way. Perth is literally on the other side of the country, but it seems like Drickus is going to be fighting Adesanya at that card. It's not official, mind you, but it's being discussed to headline that card, UFC 305, on the 17th of August. Drickus confirmed on his Instagram that he's pretty much accepted the fight. Nothing from Izzy yet. From what I could see, no one signed anything, but verbally there's probably some agreement there. So, Rob, what do you think about this, and what do you think about a headlining UFC in Perth?
Yeah, I think Adesanya fighting for a title again hurts me. But I understand. Drick has asked for it, right? He's a champ, gets what he wants. Adesanya is a draw, mate. Like, it seems like the fight that was going to happen, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's an interesting fight. I can see Adesanya just piecing him up for 5 rounds. Mm. But in saying that, Drick is tough as nails and he's awkward. I can also see Drickus getting in there and just making it awkward and you know, like, I don't know, taking him out of his rhythm. Because we saw when Adesanya fought Strickland pushing that pace and moving into his space changed the rhythm of the fight. Adesanya didn't adapt to that very well. And I think if Drickus does the same, he might have the same sort of success. But that coverage is for another episode.
Yeah, yeah. We'll obviously do our predictions for it, but let's see if it gets announced anytime soon. Try my best to make it if I can get to all the way to Perth. But finally, in the UFC news, we have GSP talking about what people have seen as a dream matchup. If things could go the way that they did, a lot of people would love to have seen GSP against Khabib Nurmagomedov. But this is what he had to say about a potential fight with Khabib when GSP was still fighting. So he said, quote, "I think Khabib could have beat me. I'm not saying I could have beat Khabib all the time. I was confident enough to take that fight that I was thinking that if I take that fight, I'm going to beat him that day at that particular place. That doesn't mean I will beat him all the time, but I was confident. Maybe I'm wrong." Rob, if I was to ask you, and I'm not going to say prime GSP against prime Khabib, it's a different question, but when GSP was available to fight and when Khabib was still fighting in the UFC, how would you see that fight going down? Who would win it?
When you say available fight, like when? Like the version
there was a point in time. There was a point in time where they were talking about GSP potentially returning in this dream fight against Khabib. So he would have been a little bit older. I think it's a different discussion to have when you're talking about prime GSP against prime Khabib. But I believe, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, there was a slight window there where they thought, you know, GSP was a chance to actually return.
I don't like the idea of non-prime GSP fighting Khabib. When GSP came back to fight Bisping at middleweight, he looked pretty bad, in my opinion. Obviously, he was good enough to beat. Like he was good still. I just think he looked better. I feel like he looked like he had a little bit of rust on him.
Yeah.
And I don't like that version versus Nurmagomedov.
Yeah.
You know, I think to beat Khabib, you'd need prime GSP.
All right. So let's say we did have prime GSP. Who do you reckon gets
I think
up?
Prime GSP beats Khabib. Okay. I think GSP's much more well-rounded.
Yeah.
I think he's got the wrestling and the jiu-jitsu to kind of take away a lot of Nurmagomedov's strengths. And yeah, GSP was like really good, man. Really, really good. He was safe. He was such a safe fighter because of his skill set. You know, if he didn't want to bang with you, he'd take you down. If you didn't want to take it down, he'd just out jab you. And, you know, anyone in between, he'd do a little bit of both. It was just, he was a really well-rounded fighter.
Dude, and so someone was talking about this the other day. I think some people might forget, not often, but might forget how good GSP really was. The only two losses that he had was against Matt Hughes and Matt Serra. And when you look at Khabib's equivalent fights at his stage in his career, they were against very, very different fighters in terms of their caliber. GSP fought such hard dudes and still did what he did. Honestly, man, I would take prime GSP as well for sure.
Yep.
I'm trying to figure out though, what age GSP was when they were talking about, or maybe that he can come back and fight him, because Khabib was fighting, what, in 2018, 2019, stopped in 2020. You know, GSP is now 42 now. He would have been around 38 at the time. And we've seen fighters at an older age fight. So it wasn't completely out of the question, which is why I think the discussion came up, you know. But yeah, that was all the UFC news. Again, pretty quiet week. But let's talk about some video game news. Again, another quiet week in the games arena. But I want to talk about Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree. It was a big talking point, Rob, because your fight is on it's the 22nd of June American time and the 23rd Australian, if I'm correct. And Shadow of the Erdtree, Elden Ring, releases on the 21st of June. How are you going to manage that? Brandon Dove8022 also asks, Rob, are you going to pull an all-nighter playing Shadow of the Erdtree the day before your fight? What's the plan, bro?
The plan is just to ignore it, go offline, and just pretend it doesn't exist until I get back.
Right. Fair.
That's the plan. Otherwise, the FOMO will kill me.
You've talked about, like, if you have a game to play in the week leading up to your fight when you're already overseas, that's pretty much what you do because all the hard training is done and there's not much else to do when you're there. Would that hold true if you somehow were able to get an early copy of Shadow of the Erdtree?
Oh, you know what? You might be on something. If I can get that a couple of weeks early, then that's all I'll be doing.
hopefully, like I haven't talked to Bandai or anything like that, but hopefully they do, you know, early review copies because we did that with Dragon's Dogma 2 and that was pretty cool, you know?
I'm going to go, oh, but I got more FOMO. I don't know if it's better or worse for me. Like, yeah, I don't know. I like the idea of a game coming out that I really like, but I just don't feel like playing. And then I miss the hype for it. And then jumping into it maybe a year later or 2 years later.
I tell you what, man. Like, and this has started happening with me ever since I was starting to do YouTube full time and started to review games and especially getting early copies. It's stressful. I don't care like how else people look at it. In that position when you're trying to make videos and you're looking at everyone else playing the game and everyone's, you know, talking about it, it gives me anxiety at times. Sometimes I just want to sit down and play a game at my own pace and not feel like I have to rush through everything to be able to talk about the game like everyone else. Because if you look at the internet, everyone is playing everything and finishes every game within 20, 30 hours. And so like with Dragon's Dogma 2, for instance, people on the same week that it came out were like, yeah, I finished the game. I put 30, 40 hours into it. I'm like, bro, what are you talking about? In 30 hours, I still haven't reached Back Patal. I'm just taking my time with this game. Stop playing games so quickly. I get stressed about it. I don't know.
Yeah. I can imagine though, because like when I'm into something, I do a lot of research. Just because it's my interest. It's not like I'm trying to get ahead or anything else. It's just if that's what I'm doing, I want everything around that I want to be a part of it. You know, I want to keep that energy. So like I watch a lot of things with Dragon's Dogma. Almost everything that there is. And I see the rat race that is content in regards to Dragon's Dogma. Like,
yeah, man.
Oh, and it's just, and they blatantly copy each other as well. And it is brutal to watch. It's like fastest money methods. And it's like the same thing 17 times. And it's rough. It is cutthroat, and it's like, get these armors, most OP armors, best weapons for your vocation, strongest vocation. It's like, relax, dude. They're all there. Yeah. They're all the same. It doesn't matter. And the game is so, honestly, the game is so well balanced that any class can do anything. Like, you really can. Yeah, you have some outliers with certain skills, but it is on it, and it's not that hard of a game. You can just get in there and start whacking things. It's pretty well balanced in that respect.
That's why I've honestly appreciated just having this podcast, because it's giving me an opportunity just to talk and chill about the games that I really like, whether or not they're popping or new or whatever. Whereas, if I was making content on my own channel, I'd be doing those guides. I'd be like, best vocation, because they get views, man. That's what adds to the stress.
You got bills to pay, man. There are bills to pay. I get it. I 100% get it.
But you know, and look, it's going to be no different with Shadow of the Erdtree. Like, obviously, are there going to be new classes with Shadow of the Erdtree? Have they talked about that, or is it just going to be the existing
ones? When you say classes, do you mean like the starting ones?
The starting ones, yeah.
Oh, does it matter? The only class worth playing is Deprived anyway, right?
I picked Samurai because of the starting stats, but eventually it doesn't matter because you're going to level up everything.
You got to play Deprived. You got to start in your knickers and with a wooden club. That's all you need. And again,
is that how you start every game?
Or is it called Prisoner?
I think it's called Prisoner. Elden Ring classes. I'll double check.
But yeah, I you got him. You got him. Like the triumph only comes from tribulation.
Yeah.
Is tribulation the right word to use?
So the class is specifically called Wretch in Elden Ring.
Wretch. Yeah, love it. That Wretch. So life. Hashtag Wretch life. That's,
you start at level 1 compared to all the other builds, where some are level 7, some are 9, some are 5. Prisoner is level 9 as well. And it's pretty much like the basic stats across the board of 10, 10, 10, 10, 10.
Yeah, but you don't need stats in that game. So you just walk around oonga boongering things with a stick. But it
min-max
the hell out of your character.
Yeah, eventually you will. You find a good rune farm. But most people aren't you. Most people aren't as good at FromSoft games as you. I'm just going to say it. Elden Ring to a lot of people is still very hard.
It's not hard. You just press block, you circle around to the back, to backstab. It's not hard. I'm not that good. Okay, it's just not hard. I think, like, yeah, it's not that hard. It's not that hard.
Are you telling me that, especially with how, you know, the variety of the bosses and how they attack you, that it's still not that hard for a new timer, right?
Nah, not at all.
Because you have to learn those patterns.
Nah, maybe you're going to die a couple of times. It's inevitable, but
a couple of times. Like,
especially if you use like the tiers. Are they called tiers? Yeah, they're called tiers. If you use the summons, like the game is pretty easy. They've made it really user friendly, like really user friendly. Like I remember in the earlier Souls games, like you make a bad build, you've like soft locked yourself out of the game, dude.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I remember I made a in Dark Souls 3 in the DLC part in the painted world. There's Sister Freya. I remember she was another person I soft locked myself in. I played just super slow character, Oonga Boonga stick, walk up to things and whack them. And she's so fast. And I just couldn't beat her. I just couldn't. And I had used all my respawns, my respecs. I had essentially soft locked myself out until I had to get good. Like, and that was frustrating, dude. I ended up just starting again.
Was there no ability to respec or anything like that, like you can in Elden Ring?
No, there was. I just used them all, mucking around on other things.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Yeah, and just like Elden Ring, you can use all those larvae tears or whatever they're called, which I have in most of my playthroughs. I've used them all. Like, I've got so many characters in Elden Ring, but I kind of want to delete them all and just start the game from zero.
But why? You don't need to.
I've got start a new 50. Game. I've got like 50 plus hours in every one of those characters and there's about five or six of them. And some of them, I've done stupid things like go out material farming for like bombs and things for like niche builds. So I don't, maybe I'll just move all those items onto another character. But
yeah,
I think this is
the thing that we were talking about the other week with Shadow of the Erdtree. So they're implementing some sort of Sekiro system where it doesn't matter what your build is at, you are pretty much starting from square one or square zero with this DLC. There's going to be some sort of powering system or leveling up system where you can't just completely wipe out enemies.
That would have to scaling, wouldn't it? They'd have to like be implementing like a scaling system, which seems very crazy.
But how else do you do it? Because people are going to walk in with their level 300 character with a million vigor and just wipe them.
Mm. Well, you just need 80 faith, 30 achievement, easy mode. Hey, also, the thing that got me through every one of these games is just remember there's some naked dude with a stick that has played all four of these games consecutively without dying once. Just remember that.
No, not without dying, without getting hit.
Without getting hit once.
Like, what the hell?
Just remember, you can do it. You can do it.
No hit, Dark Souls. I'm gonna find it so people can search up this dude. Actually ridiculous. So there are many people that have done, I say many people, there are several people that have finished Elden Ring with completely no hits.
Yep.
I don't understand. I really don't understand. And then there's this guy here, so this Twitch streamer, had completed Elden Ring, Sekiro, and Soulsborne games in one no-hit run. Is that insane to you? His name is Dinos and Gale or something. I don't know how to pronounce that.
You know what does sound fun? A hardcore version of Elden Ring. I would love that.
Is that not called New Game Plus 7?
Nah, because you die and nothing happens, right?
Yeah.
Hardcore. Like, if I die, I lose my character. I reckon that would be mad because it would change the way you play the game. Every area you go into, you'd have to be exploring. You'd have to be taken super slow. You'd have to make sure you got your exit paths, like, worked out. I was thinking about this for Dragon's Dogma as well, like, if they release, like, a hardcore mode as well, because the way I'm playing my latest save is just, I guess we're going into watching, playing, reading, right?
yeah, let's do it. We're watching, playing, reading, Rob. Yeah. More Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah, Dragon's Dogma only still. I was thinking like a hardcore mode would be awesome because like right now I'm playing with that, like if you look in your adventure log, it's zero deaths, zero brines, zero everything. Like, and I'm brutal. just It's not that hard though. It's just you run away from things get hairy. just abandon the pawns, dude. You press wait and you just run. it's great. Cause I was thinking like a hardcore mode would be cool.
Mm.
You know?
I reckon they might do it one day. I mean, you know, they have actually asked, speaking of Old Dragon's Dogma 2. They've asked through a survey what people want to see added to the game in the form of DLC. And a survival mode or a hardcore mode is always at the top of people's lists, which is why I'm surprised they're not done more often from the get-go. For sure, that would work awesomely in Dragon's Dogma 2.
I would love it if they introduced like a hunger, water, sleep meter. That would be cool. Mm. It'd be annoying but cool.
I don't know, man. So I did that in New Vegas because I had to get all the achievements. I don't find it immersive. I don't find it fun. I just find it annoying. I don't care about, it's realistic that you have to eat and drink and all that crap. I just don't find it fun. I don't know. Maybe I'm different.
I feel like it would be worse in New Vegas than it was in Fallout 4. Because Fallout 4, like, I thought it was well done. I thought, like, you had to plan out your adventures. You had to be like, okay, I'll go from here to here. And I've got a little checkpoint here where I can sleep, I can save, I can get water. Right. You know what I mean? I just got to be careful as shit until I get there. And I liked it. I thought it was cool. And you kind of always knew, like before you left anywhere, you made sure you had some purified water. You made sure you had your rations. You know, you made sure you had a good long night's sleep. You know, I don't know. I like that. I guess that's why I like those dungeon crawly games as well, because like it's about preparation and then the exploration and the trials you undertake and then coming back victorious with the spoils but wounded with no food. I don't know. It's those sort of things that I really enjoy.
No, fair enough. I mean, I still haven't done a survival mode playthrough in Fallout 4, but we are getting that next-gen update this year. So if there's going to be a time to do it, it would be.
Yeah, I've been waiting because I've been itching to play that game. I just – I've been waiting for the reboot, if you would.
It's my guess, because the Fallout Amazon show, for those of you that don't know, releases next week, and I've always suspected that if BGS had their way, they would release it day and date with that show to say, hey, you can watch this show, and if you're done, go play the game. I thought that's how they always wanted to do it, but I don't know if they're actually going to be able to hit that deadline. Mm.
Also, like in Fallout 4, like I'm thinking like, how am I going to go without the Brotherhood? Because every time I play survival, I always go Brotherhood so I have the vertebirds.
Yeah,
How else are you going to get around? Like, you need those helicopters, dude.
In survival?
Yeah, you need them to get around anywhere. And it's cool because you have to throw the grenade, the helicopter comes, you hop in it, and it literally flies you over the wasteland. It's a cool thing. I just wish they added more modes like that for all the other kind of factions.
Is there not a way to teleport with the Institute, or am I just thinking of a feature that I wish was in the game?
I probably wish, because I feel like I would have gone with the Institute if that were the case. I know to get into the Institute, you got to teleport, and when you leave the Institute, you got to teleport, but I don't think you can.
So there is an Institute teleporter, as you said, but it doesn't really work in the way that I'm thinking. There's probably a mod for it.
Goes to that one place, eh?
But that would be the way, right? I mean, it wouldn't be as cool as a vertibird, and it would kind of like undermine the fact that there's no fast travel. That's pretty much a fast travel system.
It is. But then you have to get throughout the entire game and then join up with the Institute to actually use it. I don't know. I think that's a trade-off. Yeah.
I just don't want to support the Institute. I like the Brotherhood of Steel. Screw that. No.
Why not?
No, I mean, look, on my next playthrough, I might think about it because I don't really see the Minutemen as an actual option. That's just like, whatever. It's either the Institute or the Brotherhood of Steel. And I always align with the Brotherhood of Steel. I love those guys.
Really?
I mean, you've done that as well. So you can't criticize.
Yeah, I have. No, I'm not criticizing, but I'm trying to think who I would go with. Like, I feel like I went with the Institute.
Mm.
Like my first run, because like, he's your son, dude. You know what I mean?
He used to be, really. He's not really your son. He's an old man now.
No. He's your son, man. He's your
son. he's a tyrannical leader of this weird underground group.
Dude, if my son was a tyrannical leader, I'd be tyrannical with him. Like, there is nothing I wouldn't do with my kids. Like, and I'm pretty sure, I'm 99% sure I went with the Institute because of that factor. But I was just like, Sean, tell me what to do, brother. Like, where are we going? Who are we killing? Who are we turning the robots? Let's go.
Hopefully we find out more about when it's releasing. But in terms of what I've been playing, yeah, it's still been more Dragon's Dogma 2. I just haven't had the time to play as much as I want. There are some pretty good games releasing this month that I'm excited to play. Mm. So we'll see if that happens.
I want to start again in Dragon Dogma.
Have you finished it?
I started again as a pure spellcaster, like mage sorcerer, and I'm just not liking being a sorcerer, dude, being a little waggly fingered nerd. It's killing me. Because,
there's been a lot of fun criticism in games.
Like, it's really cool. You throw spells around and you can fast spell them and stuff. But, like, more or less, I feel like the entire game, I'm just either walking around going and falling over, or I'm getting drop kicked by trolls. Dude, because like as a sorcerer, I am always one drop kick away from dying.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of criticism for the sorcerer vocation and even the mage vocation in this game.
The mage, mages are OP. Like,
oh, really? You think so?
You need them. They're essential. That's why when you go into the Rift Stones, there's 900 mages.
Yeah, you know, in your team, but doesn't mean that you want to be a mage. Yourself.
Oh, who wants to play support, dude, in any game?
That's the point.
I feel like if you were going to be support, making your own kind of mixed support through Warfarer would be the way to do it anyway. So you go like a bit of trickster, you go a bit of mage, you know what I mean? And have a bit of fun with it like that. I think I'm going to start again. I'm just not. But in saying that, though, this playthrough is my best one. I've just min-maxed every stat. I've got heaps of gold because I know what to buy now. Every quest I've done flawlessly. And I haven't even started the – I haven't – you know when Brant says, meet me in the tavern? He's still waiting there.
You've left him there, yeah.
Dude's still chilling, just getting drunk every night waiting for me.
But the funny thing is, he's there literally every night so you can keep following up on his quest line. But if you are playing the game, the best idea is to leave him because you can't fail that quest. And if you take on a bunch of side quests, you will fail them. As Rob saw with with that child the other week, they will die. The characters will die and you'll fail quest
line. Fun fact, you can get the child before getting the quest, by the way. He's there in that cave.
Oh, really?
I did that this time. Like on the way to the town, I went and got the kid. And then dropped him off. He's like,
weren't letting him die.
No, not this time. But also, again, to reiterate on what you were saying, doing Brant's quest line missions progresses a lot of other quests.
Yeah,
that don't have triggers if you don't muck around with him. So I'm not even talking like the quest where he gives you the quest and he just chills at the bar. Like he just says, "Meet me at the bar for a chat." I haven't met him at the bar. I just avoid that playlist. Like a hot zone. Like, I've just been out in the field. Like I'm already like the same level as my last. Oh, you know what I did? I went straight from Vermont.
Yeah.
Went straight from there to the rest town.
Mm-hmm.
I took the cave to the east of the rest town through the mountains and come out on the coastline just past the rest town, jumped on the back of a griffin, which gave me a lift straight to the volcanic island.
What the
and
hell?
And then dropped a port stone there.
I didn't even know that you could do that. That's sick.
Oh, dude, it's unreal. It's like, so I just fast-tracked it straight. And that's what I'm going to do. I want to start again, but I want to fast-track it again straight to the volcanic area.
That's pretty sick. I've seen some people with crazy clips. Huh?
Yeah, enemies scale. So it's like the enemies in the later end of the game aren't that much harder than the first.
Okay.
They're just different types.
I want to try something like that. So there are some clips that I've seen of people using like the catapults to open up areas that I don't even know if the developers intended it, but you can open up these big, you know, walls that can crumble by throwing a catapult rock, hitting it there, and then it opens up an entirely new area, probably earlier than they probably intended it to. I want to try something like that. And what you just talked about is that exact same scenario.
Yeah. And I want to, there's lots of cool things. So I want to make I'm going back to a warrior build.
I thought you said you didn't like warrior because it was too slow.
It is slow as hell, but
it's strong. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's not that strong. It's just that when a goblin punches me in the face, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you're a sorcerer and a goblin punches you in the face and you're a sorcerer, dude, you care a lot. And I hate that because goblins are gross and they're little weak things and I shouldn't be thrown around by things. I don't know. Fair. I need heavy armor and big Oonga Boonga sticks. I'm a simple man.
So that's what we've been playing, not really watching and reading anything. But last up, we've got viewer questions. As always, if you have viewer questions, let us know in the comments below. But the first one that we've got is from @RomanCV8VR. Says, bro, why haven't you guys reacted to Demetrius Johnson's or DJ's defeating the 250-pound heavyweight brown belt? Show him some love, mate. Rob, did you see that, by the way?
I did. I saw a clip on it on, I think, social media.
Ridiculous. Yeah. He's a ridiculous martial artist, bro. What the hell?
Yeah, big dude. But jiu-jitsu's all about that levers and angles, isn't it? Like size doesn't mean everything. But
well, clearly not.
DJ's also like a really high-level competitor.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time that I hear people talk about DJ and how good he is, my mind keeps going back to that crazy jumping armbar that he did. I don't remember who it was against. That was probably the craziest end to a fight that I've ever seen. The craziest submission that you could ever pull off. That was
unreal.
He's
a really good competitor. Like,
yeah,
not many people can reach the levels he goes to when he competes. It's, that's what made him probably the best to ever do it in that division.
100%. Well, hopefully we can get him on the podcast as soon as possible. But next up, we've got Paco X Taco 35, who's a member on the channel. So thank you for being a member. Asked, congrats on the fight announcement, Rob. Good luck. Quick question for you both. Hopefully hasn't been asked. Both being fans of Fallout, which game do you think had the best overall lineup of DLC? I think New Vegas probably had the most enjoyable, but Fallout 3s were pretty unique in the settings. Rob, best DLC overall?
I'm going to disagree with him straight away and say, New Vegas's weren't great, dude.
Like, I agree with that.
What was that valley with the burned man? Like, that was terrible.
What? Hold on. Let me get him up. I thought that one was one of the most liked ones.
Oh, that was, but by who? I don't know. It was terrible. And then the other one,
that was like Honest Hearts, the laser beam. Yeah.
Yeah, Honest Hearts. Yeah, they were all pretty piss poor. I think 4 has the best DLCs because they had new mechanics. So like 4, like the Nuka-Cola world or whatever it was called, that added a whole new faction you could join and that changed the interactions of settlements. It was pretty cool. And then the place itself to explore was whatever, but the new settlements, the new way to be a raider, to play as a raider, that's cool. It added a whole, changed the entire game if you wanted it to. And then the robot one, whatever that was, again, changes the entire game because of your access to robots and that place as a settlement place. I don't know. I think 4 had the most DLCs. Oh, and then that Harbor one. I haven't played the Harbor one, so I don't know what that was about.
That's like one of the best ones. It's like the best story in Fallout 4.
I haven't played it, but I feel like those DLCs impacted the game as a whole more so than just that few hours you play the DLC for. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong, New Vegas has a good special place in my heart. Dead Money was so ridiculously annoying to play. Very, very hard. I didn't mind Honest Hearts. I think the best one was probably Old World Blues. That had a really, really cool storyline in Big Mountain.
Dead Money was like where you broke into the vault at the end, you got all the cash.
Yeah, and got all the gold.
Yeah, I like that DLC though because you get so much cash.
Of course you did because it's so annoying and hard to play.
And so much cash out of it, but
if you can carry it.
Oh, mate, I carried it. I carried it like a champ.
Look, I actually do like your take on Fallout 4's DLC. I will say with Fallout 4's DLC, I wish there was just one more big story DLC in there because it really only had Nuka World and Far Harbor. I really like Fallout 3's DLC, though, because I like Broken Steel. It let you keep playing the game after the game ended, so that was pretty cool. But overall, I would say they're all pretty decent DLC. I can get what you're saying about New Vegas, though. And next up, we've got, I can't pronounce this name, Mekia B. Deleu 5378. Question for Rob, will you ever stream on Twitch ever again? Why did you stop? Maybe that's a good place to start. Why did you stop streaming?
Well, because I found that hard to be consistent around camps. Like, as, even with the podcast, we've there's been times we've had to like push it back to the end of the week because of sessions, and and also, well, the closer we get to the camp, we flat out just stop it for a while because it's it's just very hard. It's very hard sometimes. Like, if I've got a planned stream date, to come home wrecked, like let's say the session was extra tight, and then have to like switch on and engage with people.
Yeah.
So I found it hard to balance. Like, I think that's like an off camp thing, but I feel like if I was going to stream now, I would do it through the channel now that we have.
Yeah.
MM Arcade. I feel like we would do a stream through this platform just because, kind of, you know, I'm enjoying the podcast. I'm enjoying the direction it's taking, and I want to see it grow.
Yeah. The thing about streaming that I always found, it's really exhausting. Like, I can sit here, or we can sit here for an hour up to 2 hours, and I don't feel exhausted to the end of a podcast. But with streaming, because you have to feel like you're on all the time, people are watching you actively, and you don't want to have like any boring moments. Whereas if we have a crappy moment in our podcast, we can always cut it out. There's always a way to edit things. Not with a live stream. At the end of a live stream, I'm always exhausted. And as you said, you have to be consistent. If you don't stream almost every day and you go away for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you'll lose all your subs. You'll lose all your momentum, a lot of your viewers. Whereas with the podcast, we don't upload for a month and then we upload a new episode. Everyone's back to watch it again. That's the difference that I find with YouTube and Twitch.
I agree.
So next question we've got is at Kyle Carey 9422. Hey guys, I have a question regarding Dragon's Dogma 2. I'm assuming you're playing on PC. What are your thoughts regarding the PC port? I have a relatively good rig and I'm getting 35 FPS and even a crash here and there when I'm in the main city. In my opinion, for 110 AUD, this is ridiculous. The game is broken. Rob, what do you think about the PC port of Dragon's Dogma 2?
I haven't had too many problems with it. Yesterday, for whatever reason, I was getting massive frame drops and I just, like, it was unplayable. So I just went to bed. Gonna find out if that's still happening. I don't know. Like, I haven't had too much of a problem. There's been areas where I've been getting bad frame drops. And then it clears itself up and keep going. For the most part, I haven't had too many problems. There was a cutscene that would hard crash my computer every time.
Oh wow!
That I got around by skipping the cutscene fast enough. so I don't know. Like, understandably, it's not a good thing, and I expect them to work on it, but I'm not going to smash these guys for releasing the game not in the most optimal state that it could ever be in, because there's a lot of moving parts with that. Yeah. And, like, let's be honest, for them to nut out every single thing, it would have taken, like, months longer for the game to come out. I'm really happy I have the game now. Like, I do feel that there's more coming and that the game was released in a stage where they didn't put everything they wanted to in it, but I'm for the most part, I'm happy. Like, if you're one of those people that it's just crashing on you constantly, you cannot play it, then you need a refund and maybe come back to the game.
Yeah, that would be my advice as well. The thing is, it's not just the PC port. So whether you're on PC, console, whatever, the game, because it's very CPU bound, whenever you go into big towns and there's a lot of NPCs, the NPCs and their pathing rely on your CPU. And most people haven't really upgraded their CPU recently. You're upgrading your GPU, and even just generally, GPUs are getting better faster than CPUs are. That's why even on my rig, I'll find frame drops in the big cities. But they have said, Capcom, that they're going to be working on it. And hopefully we'll see that sometime soon. Even on console, if you're playing now, you can now set a hard cap for your frame rate. You can turn off ray tracing. You can turn off motion blur. So they've already done things to improve it. So either you get a refund now and then you purchase the game on a sale when you're ready and it's, you know, improved, or you just wait it out, because I don't want the game's experience to be undermined by performance issues, because it's a really good game. Like, it's really enjoyable, and I've enjoyed my time in it. Next up, and the final question, we have at Marty Fake News Usman, or Newsman 170. This is in reference to your fight, Rob. So if this is a number one contender fight, then who does Sean fight next? A Jared rematch, question mark. Sean has kind of been like, I'll say complaining is probably the best way to describe it. He's been wanting that immediate rematch with Drickus. It seems like he's not going to get it. He said that he might just go to boxing if he doesn't get that fight. He really wants it. He feels like he won that fight. What do you do with Sean now? If you are fighting Hamzat and Drickus is fighting Izzy, it has to be Cannoneer, right? That has to be the fight.
Perhaps. It's a... Mate, I don't know. What does he do? I don't care. Like, I don't get, go to boxing then. I don't know. You know, hard for me to care about other middleweights fighting for the same thing as I am.
Like, fair, yeah.
You know what I mean? I think he says a lot of crap, but like he might go to boxing. He said crazier things than that. Like, maybe boxing is a good idea. He's a good boxer.
He's a good boxer.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think we'll see a Jared rematch. I don't know what he does, to be honest. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I am Vittori, interested to see.
Maybe? Did he fight Vittori?
Vittori's a good shout. Yeah. Sorry?
Did he fight Vittori? No, not yet. So
no, I don't Vittori. Think he's fought Vittori. Yeah. I'm genuinely interested to see, especially what they do with Jared, because he's on a bit of a run. I reckon they're going to make that fight. If Sean is up for it, Jared against Sean, even though it's a rematch, I think that's a good fight to make. I don't know where Vittori slots into that equation. But that's it, Rob. That was episode 37 of the MMRcade podcast. This is obviously a shorter episode, but next week,
what do you mean
we've
shorter?
Got a big episode.
51, 52 minutes. We usually do an hour. I was hoping it was going to be shorter, like, quick, cheeky 35 minutes. It was not.
To be fair. Hold on. To be fair, you were gushing about Dragon's Dogma 2 for a good 20 minutes there. That was on you. That
it's
wasn't on me.
I can't keep the damn trap shut.
But next week, we are going to have, I think I might split it up into two different videos because we're doing our UFC 300 predictions. I think that's the best way to go about it. Again, let us know what you think in the comments below. But Rob, that's going to be a big week for us because it's going to be a huge card.
It is. There's too many good fights to talk about. Maybe I'll just leave people out. I don't know. Tell us what you want to hear, guys. And thank you for the support. Let's get us to 20K.
Cheers, guys.